Testing, testing. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Testing, 4, 5, 6. 4, 5, 6. Henry Swanson, the Unalaska City School, February 23rd, 1981. A problem. I wanted to ask you about islands of four mountains.
Oh yeah.
And when you're going from Unalaska out towards Adak or out west, or if you're coming back in east.
Yeah.
Is there any time when the islands of four mountains look like four mountains?
Yes, they do. You know that, let's see, there is these two big mountains. That's Mount Cleveland on here.
Uh-huh.
And Carlisle Island. Let's see, what's the name of that? I guess Carlisle. Those are big cones, you know. The
regular symmetrical volcanoes.
Right from the water up. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, they're 8,000 or 9,000 feet, I think. They're awful high. Mm-hmm. I think they're the highest mountains in the Lucerne chain. And, well, usually from we came this way.
Coming east,
yeah, or going that way. You'd
north
see, you'd see this. That's two, Kagamel, and then this little island here,
north of Kagamel.
Yeah, that. What the heck's the name of it?
Here they are down here.
Oh yeah, here's
Uliaga.
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 Okay.
So those are the four you see. Now this Herbert Island is not very high. It's a well, it's a blown-out crater, and these two have never been blown yet, I don't think, because they come right up to a point.
Mm.
And
were they ever used as navigation aids?
No, not in my days.
Mm-hmm.
And Smog Pass here, and Kagamel Volcano, Kagamel Volcano. Well, those were all volcanoes.
Have you landed on those islands?
Oh yeah, I've been on all of them. In fact, I spent 5 months on this little one.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
How did you do that?
I was trapping it. I owned that island.
Yeah?
Yeah, and I was trapping it, and that's the time the Umnak Native got wrecked.
Okay. That was a boat, Shannon, that was owned by the Nikolsky village.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they, if they hadn't got wrecked, they would pick me up the next day, and really blew that night. I took a can of tobacco and cigarette papers and went in a little cave the night, you know, my house was going to blow away, so I thought. Yeah, it was a real storm that night.
Had you built the house yourself?
Yeah, and the only reason it didn't blow away was it had roots. You know, when I built the floor, before I built the house, I got a lot of long stakes and drove them in the ground every way and nailed them to the floor joists. That house is still there.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. Billy Hope asked me, he says, I wonder who, you know, he said I was by that island and I saw a house there.
Hmm.
And I wonder who, how that got there. I told him I built it. See, I built that in, let's see, what year was it? It's 36 or 37.
26 or 27.
No, 30.
30?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and this, let's see, this Kagamal Island, that's where the burial ground, you know, there's a cave there,
mm-hmm,
full of bones and stuff. That's where, what's his name, Jockelson,
oh, yeah,
long time ago,
mm-hmm,
I think it was Jockelson.
Yeah, I think Jockelson and Erdlischka both got...
Yeah, but this was way back when I was a kid.
Okay, would have been Jockelson then.
Yeah, and he brought boxes and barrels full of bones from there.
Hmm.
And I didn't see it, but I heard there was a 7-foot skeleton in among his things there. And then... Oh yeah, on this little island too, there must have been a big village there, right where I built the house.
Yeah.
There's the remains and the ground there is all full of flint chips and, you know, where they made arrowheads.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, according to history, there was some bad Aleuts there used to raid Umnak.
Oh yeah? From all of the islands or?
From Four Mountains.
From Four Mountains, uh-huh.
Yeah, it's in that history book. Glotov, Russian, was the governor.
Uh-huh.
And he went over there and wiped them out.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yeah. And I think that's where they lived. Because the place there where I built that house, it's a bad landing. I had to haul all my lumber up a steep bank, about 75 feet, almost straight up. In their little flat there, and that's where the village was.
How did you get the lumber there?
On a boat, that landed me. And I had to take it up the steep bank one at a time. I made a little strap and then I put a rope from up there, and I'd climb the rope and walk up with a board, go down, do it over again.
I thought when the people went out fox trapping, they usually went, like, with partners.
Oh, yeah. That time I went alone.
Mm.
I was only going to be there. I went there late. I was only going to be there a couple of months.
Late would be, like, in November?
Yeah. I was only going to be there a couple of months, which I would have been, but the boat got wrecked. So they had to wait till until the boat came from Seattle, which was, I was there 5 months altogether.
What did you do the extra months?
Nothing except just look for the boat to come, and the boat was, let's see, here I was, and the boat was wrecked here, right there.
Oh, the Umnak Native?
Yeah.
Wrecked in...
Let's see, was it there or here? It was in the first...
In Inuvik Bay?
Yeah. In the first cove. I think it was here.
Mm-hmm.
It was on this side of the bay.
Mm-hmm.
And the wind was this way.
Who was skipper of the boat when it wrecked?
Johnny Stanks.
Okay.
Then there was the... AC Company skipper was on there with him too, fellow by name of Nelson.
Hmm.
The AC Company lost their boat here let's see. They were going through the, they lost it on Carlisle. I think they were going through here, and the tide took them sideways, and they got wrecked there. And they went on a dory with oars and to Samalga.
Oh.
And then to Nikolsky. And the Umnak native had supplies for Nikolsky, you know, and he went along with
Stanks?
It was, yeah, Stanks. Well, he was working for the AC company.
Mm-hmm. Was that a seaworthy boat, the Umnak native?
Oh yeah, brand new boat.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's only about a year old. A 65-foot boat. And something like these halibut schooners, that type. Two masts with a pilot house on the stern. And the boat that AC was, they used it for, well, they went all over the islands and landing trappers and this and that and hauling supplies to all the villages. And Eunice, was the name of it, okay. Eunice.
So then who finally picked you up?
Oh, this boat came from Seattle. Let's see. Yeah, it was Dorothea.
Okay.
Dorothea.
Okay.
The hauling supplies for Bowman, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Larson was the captain on it.
Okay.
Snapper Larson. The one they called Snapper Larson. Yeah, he was up here. Well, he ran boats out islands quite a bit.
Were there any other people stranded that winter because of the Umnak native?
Let's see. Well, there was people on several of these other islands, like Unaska here. And Amukta, and then this Seaguam, because that's supposed to be here, because it's all in different squares. See, I was going to go with them west.
Oh.
And, when they picked me up, they were going to pick me up first, then I'd go along with them to where I'll pick up on the other islands.
What did you do when you finally saw the boat coming in?
Well, I just made the coffee the morning and she was on, because this don't show it good, you know. It's too small. I was on this side of the island.
On the east, southeast,
right
sort
there.
Of. Uh-huh.
Yeah, just about in there. See, there's this here is a point sticks out.
Okay.
Then the point on that end. And they must have been here. And I heard the whistle blow that came around the point, and there they were.
Mm.
And I took my sacks of fox pelts and just threw them down the bank, and I was ready to go on.
Take off right away?
Yeah. I would have went out with my own dory, but it was smashed up in that storm.
Mm.
I had it hauled way up in the grass. I had it bottom up. And I had a big driftwood pile over it. And I had it made fast, the bow, with a chain around the... a boulder.
Okay.
And that night when the Omnak native said, it's how hard it blew. It blew all that wood away. And then waved my dory back and forth up in the air this way and smashed it all to pieces. So all was left there was a chain and pieces of bow stem that was on the chain. That's all. Just smashed it all to kindling wood. Well, must have, after it blew the wood off, you know, it took the dory and waved it back and forth. And there was all big boulders there. So if, there was trappers on Kagamo. You know, if my dory wasn't busted, I was going to go across there and walk over to their camp over here. Kagamo camp is right there.
Get on the east side.
Herbert Island belonged to Sergei Goley in Atka. Who the heck had UNESCO? And they had two houses on UNESCO, one there and one here. That's where that S is.
An island.
That's where what's his name got lost in here after the war.
I've heard the name, I think.
He was married to a girl here. He worked for Patterson. And he was going to trap UNESCO and he couldn't land there, so he landed here with Nick Peterson.
On Amukta?
On Amukta. Then he took off and with a skiff to go over there. He had a big skiff, a herring skiff that had been used for herring fishing. And so the northeast wind came up and several days later Nick Peterson found his skiff right here. Nick Peterson's camp was here.
On the southern end of Amukta.
Yeah. On the bigger map, you could see it better. Got long reef sticks out here. Kind of makes a kind of a harbor in there.
But he never found the guy. Just
no.
Just the skiff.
Yeah, he probably couldn't make it over there and started to run back. Anyhow, he didn't make it back.
One of these four mountain islands had a volcanic eruption during the war.
Which one was that? Chuginadek.
Okay.
They had the outpost there, right here in Applegate Cove. I don't know how big it was. I was never to it. Right there. One of the men went out and he didn't come back home. So when they went out to look for him, there was a lava flow. And they found his tracks up to the lava flow, but not on the lava flow. So he must have got caught there. Anyhow, that's the story. And he was a sergeant. Maybe he was a mean sergeant and they done away with him or something. But anyhow, that's the story.
On these islands, were they primarily blue fox?
Yeah.
That they were trapping?
Let's see. Chuginadak's the only island that didn't have blue foxes on. That had reds on. And still has, I guess, from way back. See that Herbert Island, Carlisle, and Kagama, and this Liger all had blues on. Unaska, see Guam. That is, they were planted there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Amley had the silvers on.
Mm-hmm.
That is from way back,
mm-hmm.
from Russian times, I guess. And probably still, because the Atka people were going to clean the silvers off and put blues on. I don't know if they ever did it.
Excuse me, right, that is something that came before that that I gave you this morning.
Oh, okay, thanks.
Then Atka Island had blues. That is from way back.
Uh-huh.
See, all these were other islands.
What about Amukta now? You didn't mention Amukta.
Amukta, yeah, that had blues.
It had
on.
Blues too,
yeah.
Okay.
And this little one. Not that, that had, oh, that was.
Chagula?
Yeah, that had nothing on. Then this had blues.
Amukta. Seaguam.
Yeah. The postmaster, Finch,
mm.
had that island.
Mm.
Then this had, of course, these were all planted, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
But except this had reds on from Russian time.
Mm-hmm. Chicken at that.
And this had silvers.
Yeah.
And of course, Atka had blues from way back. I don't know, from Russian time, I guess. And. Let's see, all of these had blues on that were planted.
All those around Adak?
All of these here. In fact, I had this island, Little Taniga.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, when you say you had an island, what does that mean?
Leased.
You leased it, and you were the sole trapper on that island?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, anybody else trapped there was a poacher. Yeah.
How much did it cost you?
$25 a year. There was.
And how much could you get for a single fox pelt?
At that time, anywhere from 100 to. I know some sell for 300.
So it was pretty profitable. I mean, if you could get an island
sure.
for $25.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and you didn't have to live on the island. The foxes. Lived on their own on food what was on the island.
Uh-huh.
Then, the Great Sitkin had reds on from way back, Russian times. These others had nothing, and Adak had silvers.
Mm.
And there was four of us had Adak for $25 a year.
Yeah.
And of course, I stayed on there and tried to kill off the silvers. There wasn't very many. Then the Atka people came there and killed off some too. And we put blues on, and they're still there, I guess.
Mm.
The Navy gets nice blue foxes now.
Oh, yeah. Ah.
And they. They didn't do too good. Because there was, I don't know why, but because the silver seemed to have been killed off. Now in Great Sitkin, we put blues on there, and there were them big reds, these were big fellas, ate up the blues.
Oh, yeah.
Then later on, John Taylor went there, and he stayed there two summers and one winter, and I guess he got all the reds off.
Mm.
And he done pretty good with losing.
Who were the four people that had ADAC?
There was myself and Bull Shannon and Bill Gardner and Captain Peterson.
Mm.
You know that my stepfather ran the trading vessel up in Arctic.
What was the first island that you had?
This little Tanica. Kaniga had reds on too, nice reds. That's one Bowman had.
Yeah, with his
big
ranch out there.
Yeah, and here's where he had his place, right in that bay there. Nice bay, shallow though, right in there. That's where the Swallow got wrecked. You know, in 35, the Navy surveyed all this for themselves. Mm-hmm. All of this here.
All around Adak.
Adak and Kaniga. I don't know about Kaniga so much, but they surveyed that in, I think it was 35. Nobody knew about it except people that were out there and saw it. Mm-hmm. They had three minesweepers. Mm-hmm. That's how Adak, the cove there, mm-hmm. Sweeper Cove, mm-hmm. That's where it got its name.
Oh, okay.
And this was for themselves, this survey. And they'd done a good survey too. They had good maps of this area. Mm. They were probably planning the Navy base there. Already, because that's where it went.
Where did you have your camp on Adak?
Right where the base is now.
Okay.
See this.
And there was a lagoon there. They made the a runway out of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. No, well, here it is, right here. I guess Sweeper Cove. There's a lot of little bays here. And there's up there, they call that Clam Lagoon.
North of it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right there. And here was, it wasn't really a lagoon, it was a place where the tide went in and out. At low tide, there was just a creek in there, but there was this big sand flat. And they, at the mouth there of the creek, they built a dam with a gate in, and then they laid the steel right on that sand in there. They had runway there in no time. Till they closed this gate at low tide.
All right. There wasn't water coming down the flats.
So oh, yeah. Going on. There was creeks coming in there, but then but the tide went in too. Mm-hmm. So there'd be a foot of water over this sand, this big sand flat. Mm-hmm. But they'd open the gate then at low tide and run the creek water out. Mm-hmm. So that kept their airfield dry. Later on, they built, you know, it bigger and. But that first airstrip was right on that sand flat in there. And it was a mile long and a lot of width. So all they had to do, they didn't have to do any grading or anything. They just laid the steel map down and that was it. I think they had planes flying in and out there in a week after they landed. Real short, anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, let's see, And then from here, there was nothing.
From Tanaga out?
Yeah. Nothing. Of course, they put blue foxes on Tanaga. Natka people put them on Amchitka. And Semisopitsnoy, but they had nothing on.
Mm.
They were bare, all these islands here. And Kiskin, well, the whole thing had nothing on. but they put blues on all of them. Except these little ones right here.
In between Sulula and Little Sitka?
Squats off and Davidoff. Those are, they're fairly big islands, but they're in no beach on them. They're straight up and down cliffs.
Okay.
Then, West Islands and Chitka. And Chitka Tanya.
These are in between there, huh?
Oh, yeah. And Chitka. Oh, yeah. That's, yeah, that's here.
Mm-hmm. After Tanaga, the Delaroff Island?
Yeah. Here's the one that, Kurloi, that erupted several months ago.
Hmm.
You know, the let's see, or was it a year ago? Not too far back. About the same time that Mount St. Helens.
Okay.
Yeah, the only reason they saw it was the planes flying to Orient.
Mm-hmm.
They were up above the clouds, and here was this big column of smoke coming up through the clouds, 40,000 feet or something like that. There wasn't much about it in the news except that they saw it. Now that thing exploded. Let's see, what year was it? In the late 20s? That really erupted then. I saw that myself when I went out there, and it was just one mass of fire from the top right onto the beach. And there was a, the trappers had just been taken off of there. And the, right where their camp was 300 feet deep of, so they say. But anyhow, right there where their camp was, this stuff coming down, this pumice stone and all that, built a peninsula out there. When I was coming by there, I saw all this fire, and there was this hunk of land that wasn't there before. The next time, maybe 6 months later, and that land was gone. It got washed away, you know. It was ashes and pumice stone, stuff like that. And then about, couple months after this, the thing erupted, I run, right here, right about here, yeah, I was going here.
You were heading over to?
To Adak.
To Adak,
yeah.
From the east.
I always came in through here. And I went to Adak. Nice inside passage.
In between all those islands. You had to know where you were going, though, I bet.
Oh, yeah. And I was about here. No, I was, this Kasatoshi, that's the one with the lake in.
Okay.
Down sea level. Tide goes in and out.
Yeah.
And I was about here when I run through a big field of pumice stone. And the calm night, you know, and I heard swishing sound, and I looked, and we were running through floating pumice stone.
Yeah.
Right here.
Huh.
Then about a couple of weeks later, I was coming back, and I stopped in here and anchored. The pumice stone had drifted in there. And there was pumice stone high as this table on the high water line on the beach. And three dead giant squids in with that pumice stone to the that biggest squid was about that high to his body.
4 feet, yeah?
Yeah. Four.
Just the body part?
Yeah, because it went to a tail, you know.
Uh-huh.
And the other end had the arms.
Hmm.
Yeah, he was, he must have weighed a ton anyhow.
Yeah.
Maybe more.
Hmm.
And they must have died in this, with this pumice stone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because there were three of them.
Hmm.
Right, and they were right together. Two, and they drifted in with pumice stone, and there was a big one, and another small, middle-sized one, and a small one.
Mm.
The small one was about big as a 50-gallon barrel.
Yeah.
And the middle-sized one was about that high, in, you know, in the middle,
mm-hmm.
the body, round, you know.
Mm.
With a hole in the end with the arms,
yeah.
And a tapered tail on the mm-hmm. other end.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest one was up to here on me when I stood alongside of him, up as far as my waist. Or maybe a little higher, it was big.
Any thoughts on Kiska?
On, let's see, oh yeah, sure. That Kiska Island, Sergey Goley had interest in that. Kiska Island, and there was his brother-in-law, a Navy guy. What was his name? He's married to Sergey Goley's sister. He was in on that. And a Navy officer, Navy officer by the name of Keyser, I think his name was Keyser. They had this island. They took a lot of fur off of it too. Then the Segul Island was these charts are, you know, the distance is not right on this. See, this Segul Island is about 12 miles from Kiska.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It looks a lot farther there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks that way. Though it might not be, because this... But then this small-scale chart, and it's...
Mm-hmm. Why isn't Tanaga one of the bird refuge islands? Or, see, they're all green except Unalaska, Umnak, Akutan area, and then Tanaga.
Yeah.
National Wildlife Refuge. Tanaga's not in the National Wildlife Refuge. I've always wondered why.
Sure,
I don't know.
I don't know, this, this is not in.
Yeah, right, these are the ones that aren't in, like on Alaska and Umnak.
Oh, this color is what's in.
Yeah, anything green.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know about Tanaga, why it should be, they must have some reason for it.
Yeah, because there's no base out there now.
No. Well, the only base was on Tanaga during the war was right here. Right here.
On the west side?
West side. Not in the big bay. There's a big bay there. But it was out here.
Mm.
The airfield there. It was quite a big base. And then here's... Oh, yeah. And these two little islands here, Ukaluga and Schuylkill. They had the airfield on there.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
On each of them?
No, on this one, the west one.
Ah.
That one there. And of course, Amchitka, they had a big one. And this Segul Island, let's see, that's the one I was going to go behind. I was with the Army tug and barge when they landed on that too. And I went along as pilot. And we rendezvoused here at Samosopets now. Then we went, we were bypassing Kiska out here. And the flagship, that's the Wells, was the name of big steam tug. That was the flagship of the tug and barge fleet. We were sinking right here.
Were you on it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was pilot.
Oh, okay.
We had the scow in tow with a gigantic shovel on it that we picked up in Amchitka. Gee, that, the big scow, you know, and that big shovel filled the scow. Yeah, and they used coal for dunnage, you know. They had this big machine there, and the shovel portion, it was one of them shovels that were with the arm, one that ran with cables. And that shovel was twice as wide as this room, I guess. Giant thing. The boom and everything was on deck. And we started to sink. Yeah. About here, see, there was six or seven tugs. Anyhow, the destroyer with us, and they were going to take us off. They came to the water in the engine room was halfway up the engine. And then the boiler.
Do you want to stretch?
In the boiler room, it was right up to the boilers.
Okay, and then if you see any of the class, tell them we're going to be in here, okay?
In full class?
Yeah, on the floor.
And the water was halfway up the engine.
Well, where was the water coming from?
From on top, the storm.
Oh.
Not too bad a storm. We were loaded and with water and fuel and everything. Well, when we left the dock in A deck, the deck was awash right alongside the dock. That's how loaded we were. And this thing was all, the deck was leaky. Doors would fly open, and the steering gear had two big holes in that big. And deck was awash. All this water was coming from on top. So anyhow, we were going to abandon ship, and the destroyer came, and they used this Lyle gun to shoot heaving line to us, but they were too far away, and it fell in the water. And anyhow. We signaled back to them that we'd keep on, we'll try it. We turned around to go back to Amchitka anyhow then. And then here was an extra big sea came and almost tipped us over, all that water, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And took our signal lamp off the top of the pilot house, so we couldn't signal anymore. And the next tug went up behind the destroyer. And, well, we turned then. Let's see, where was this? We were out here. And about here somewhere. So in order to save ourselves from tipping over, we went this way. Fair wind. Gee, the wind was here. The other tugs were okay. They were, but we would have been okay, but they took this...
Down behind Sagula. Well, yeah. Now, Kiska was occupied by Japanese at that
time.
Oh,
yeah, sure, yeah. Anyhow, this tug went on to Amchitka with one tug, I mean, this destroyer.
Mm. With one tug instead
yeah.
of six?
The one that passed us and went behind them, and the other tugs followed us. So, and there was no communication, so they wondered what was happening.
Mm.
So there was just communication with a blinker.
Yeah.
And so anyhow, I was going to go behind Sagula,
mm-hmm.
and where it was maybe smooth and pump her out. And another thing, we had to keep her from rolling because, you know, we'd tip over all
mm-hmm.
that water, go to that side.
Mm.
Besides, was putting out the fires under the boiler
yeah.
when she rolled. So we'd be losing steam. And the pumps, steam pumps in engine room were all underwater too, but they were still pumping.
Mm.
So anyhow, it smoothed out before we got there, which was nice.
Find a spot. See, he's a real gentleman.
Oh.
Who was the skipper of that? Can you remember his name?
What the heck was his name now? What? Anyhow, he was drunk all that night.
Oh, no.
Yeah, sure.
The night of the storm and everything?
Yeah, when we were sinking. Yeah, he had a 5-gallon keg of homebrew, and he decided to, well, we figured we were going to die any minute.
Yeah.
And so he wanted to finish his homebrew before he died. And there he was singing and happy, and the rest of us were getting ready to jump overboard.
So where did you finally make it, if you were behind Sagula?
Yeah, no, we didn't. It calmed down, then we kept on going.
Oh.
We turned around, went out. Then we got about here. And here we see a big cloud of smoke. That destroyer was coming back looking for us. He never even missed us.
Yeah.
That shows how good they were watching, you know.
Find a spot on the floor, it's nice and comfortable. Come on in, we're in here.
We're all in here?
Yeah, we're all in here.
Okay, the whole just, class is supposed to come in here?
Yeah, just find a spot someplace. And,
hold on.
Okay, wherever you can be comfortable. And where's Glenn? He was going to...
He went to his office.
Oh, okay.
Nobody knows, man.
Well, there's a note on the door down there.
There ain't. The door's open.
Oh, I see. Okay. Find a spot, wherever it's comfortable.
Oh, buckets.
Yeah, just find a spot.
By my finger.
Leave the door open, though, okay? Kelly, leave the door open, please.
Okay, they're open.
Because it gets too hot. Yeah, I'll leave it open. Yeah, you can shove that under there if you want. No, it's okay. Yeah. Most of you know Henry Swanson, and for those of you who don't, Henry's lived here at Unalaska since when?
Well, outside of a 10-year period, since 1895.
So long time.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
1895?
1895,
last century.
So he's seen an awful lot of the history of this area. Not as much.
The only time I didn't see was from 1910 till 1920. You know, that's the time I was out.
What were you out for?
Oh, for everything. I was in the Navy for one thing. 4 years. Hmm?
What was it like when you were here during the war?
Well, I was, I ran a boat for the Army, uh-huh. Outpost tender. And, it was, let's see, in 42. Well, I went to ADEC.
And,
from here, ran the outpost tender out there. And it was, it was wartime. You know, there was a lot of things going on that don't go on now.
Last hour, we were going over a lot of the islands, and Henry was pointing out which islands had what kinds of foxes on them. Because the fox farming was a big industry here.
What was that like?
Hmm?
What was that like? What do you do?
Well, we were rich. Because we had fox islands all the way from here to that two different people. Well, that was a big deal then, you know, during the 20s and into the 30s, mm-hmm. but... price went down during the 30s, and during the war it went down to nothing.
Hmm. He said that you could rent a Fox Island for $25
a year.
A year.
Big or small, no matter what size. $25 a year.
You
and,
were the only one on that island.
Hmm?
You were the only one on that island.
Yeah, you didn't have to live on it. You just went there and took 100 foxes off. And sold them for $100 a piece, and so you had your payday made in 1 month.
When would you usually go to one of those islands?
In November.
November?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And stay for how long?
Till they come and picked us up, which 1 year they kind of missed. We were on the island 9 months that year.
9 months?
9 months.
Which island?
That was Cavalga.
Cavalga.
Out in that bunch where the girl oil is.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were there 9 months. So, of course, there was three of us. And we had an old man with us that had done all the work. So, but then after trapping, you know, and you had to wait, that's the bad part, after January. So we got picked up in June that year.
Yeah. What would you do with the, how did you go about trapping?
Well, we used the steel traps.
Like the ones they use nowadays?
Mm-hmm. Them regular number two or three or whatever it was.
Where did you put them?
In the fox trails and of course those foxes were easy to catch, you know, they were pretty tame. Nobody bothering them except you know. So they...
Do you disguise or try to camouflage fox traps? Glenn does a lot of trapping.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, a little bit. Not much.
How do you do it?
Hmm?
How do you do it?
You set the trap in the trail. You know, they have trails where they walk all the time when there's no snow. And... you just set the trap in the trail and cover it over with grass or whatever that's in the trail there.
How do you skin them?
Well, you cut them from the heel to the heel on the back, peel the skin off you cut the tail down a little ways. And then you take the rest of the tail, and you take the skin, pull the tail out, then you have to split the tail, though, to dry it all the way to the end. then you would, or you skin the hind legs then. Then you stand on the hind legs and pull the skin off. It only takes 2 or 3 minutes to skin a fox. That is when you know how. And then you peel it off the front legs.
You just peel it off? Then?
Yeah.
When do you have to do that? Right after you kill them, or does it matter?
Well, it's best to do it right after you kill them. But that is, if you don't, then you have to carry the whole fox home with you, which is kind of rough if you kill half a dozen. Makes a big... and they're warm then, too, you know, and easy to skin.
Were they usually killed by the traps?
Hmm?
Would the trap kill the fox?
No.
No.
No, you have to kill them.
Okay, how do you kill them?
You tap them on the end of the nose on top.
Oh, on top?
Yeah, but on the nose, not on the head. You can hammer them on the head all day and they won't die, but you tap them on the right to about, say, inch from the end of the nose.
Yeah?
Yeah, a little tap and they keel over, have a fit. And while they're having a fit, you break their neck.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, you take the fox up and put him here.
Between your legs.
Nose out, yeah. And you have a hold of him here and you grab him under the jaw.
Uh-huh.
This way. And pull his head way back and go that way and that's it.
Mm.
Though it takes a little practice, I remember the first fox I tried to kill. I twisted his neck and then went through all kind of motions, and then I laid him on the ground there and was doing something else, setting trap or anything. And when I went to pick him up, he was standing up and staggering around and going to walk away. Yeah, you hammer them on the head, they got a tough skull.
Hmm. The tap on the nose must...
Well, the nose is full of nerves, I guess, or something, and just a little tap, it don't take much.
Hmm.
Just a sharp rap, and they keel over, and...
I suppose one of the important things is not to damage the skin or the
mm-hmm.
pelt.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're selling. So once you've got the skin off the carcass...
Mm-hmm.
Did you skin them right off the head then too, right?
Oh yeah, all the way. And you can, most of the skin you can pull off because that leaves the fat on. You have to scrape that off. And then when you get the head... there's a lot of gristle there. Yeah, you have to kind of do a little cutting there.
Right, the ears.
And the ears, and then
nose.
Take the gristle out the ears. That is for drying, and mm-hmm. and then around the eyes, you know, and all that.
I don't know where to cut, like, around the mouth.
Yeah, you leave a little ridge. All around the edge, the lip.
Yeah.
You know, so you hang on the stretcher.
Is that the only kind of animals you killed?
That's the only kind I killed for fur. Well, I killed lots of other animals to eat.
Like what?
Caribou and. I never killed a moose. I've ate lots of moose, but I never shot one. I killed a lot of caribou. Never killed a bear, though I saw lots of them on the mainland. And But well, I didn't care to kill a bear. I didn't want to see him.
Yeah. What would you do with the fox skin then after it's off the fox?
Well, you cleaned it. Cleaned all the fat and
with,
stuff off.
A knife?
You scrape it off.
Scrape it off?
You start down at the legs. And, well, what did you use to clean them?
Well, I don't pull it off when
yeah.
I get all the fat on it. I usually take my time and make the...
Oh,
I
yeah.
just keep go around and get all the fat off on the carcass.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to go back and do that. I just skin
yeah.
it right close to the skin all the way.
All the way. It takes you a long time then, huh?
15 minutes.
Then. Yeah. But on the cleaning them, let's see, when I was... killing blue foxes, I used to sometimes clean dozen in the evening.
Hmm.
And I had to, because there were lots of them, you know, and you killed a bunch of them. And we used a stick, a long pole about that big around, nice and smooth. Then the end is tapered, like for about 10 inches. And you put the front leg over that taper. First you clean it and you get all this cleaned.
Uh-huh.
Then you put him on this stick with his nose down. Start from the hind legs and scrape all the way down.
Hmm. What was the point in getting all the fat off of the...
To dry it.
Just to dry it?
Yeah.
Can you turn it to sort of like a paper?
Yeah. And the let's see, yeah, the cleaner you get it, the quicker it'll dry. I know the first fox I tried to clean, you know.
Uh-huh.
I thought they had them clean, but there was... It was a real fat fox, and there was a layer of oil all through the back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I left that in. I didn't know any, you know, and so that here I dried that fox for a whole week.
What?
And it was, it just wouldn't dry.
Just
oil. So then finally, it started to rot. I had to throw
yeah.
it away.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's that about that wide on the back of oil right next to skin with a little skin on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fat. Well, I had all this fat off and I was very careful not to puncture that that little skin.
Mm.
So there was that layer of oil about that wide and all the way up the back that was still there. The skin wouldn't dry, it just rotted.
Yeah, it's a sort of a brown film.
Yeah.
And it's right along the back where the
yeah.
backbone mm. runs. Or
yeah, and it's
like right back here. And
just above the tail?
It goes all up to shoulder blade.
Yeah.
Huh.
And it's just on the back about that wide. And there's a skin over it.
Mm-hmm.
A tissue. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought that was a skin, you know. So
yeah,
I was very careful not to puncture it.
Yeah. If you take the knife and you touch it, then you can see that there's a separation.
Yeah, sure. Well, I found that out. See, my teacher was, this gardener that he was about 65 years old.
Mm.
And that's all he did all his life, so he knew the business.
Mm. I've seen these fox frames. In fact, Linda, would you go in the Audi language room?
The stretchers.
Yeah, the stretchers. And over by a file cabinet. Okay, well, why don't you, Roger, you know where it is and what I'm talking about? And bring it in.
So where did you do trapping? Where did you trap at?
Oh, I've trapped out here for a few years.
Oh, out here, huh?
How come you don't eat it?
Hmm?
How come you don't eat it?
Eat? Well, I don't know. They say it's good. I know one guy that ate it, and he said it was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was out on this gurloi, and there was two of them, and his partner got cabin fever. So he went out trapping, and this other guy, the one that cooked the fox, he asked his partner what he'd like to eat. They had plenty to eat in the evening. He was going to stay home and do some work at the camp, and the guy had the cabin fever, he was cranky, and he said, oh, I'll cook some fox. And so he did. And when he came back in the evening, here was this nice meal, roasted fox legs. And he said he ate two of them himself. He said they were good, because he doctored them up some way. So the guy with the cabin fever, he tasted it, and he wouldn't eat the fox. So the cook asked him if he, why he wouldn't, don't he like that? No, well, he said, yes, it's good, but it's fox. He said, well, I did the same with monkey one time. Yeah. The cook cooked monkeys. I was down in Panama. That was when the Panama Canal was brand new. I was in the Navy then, and I don't know, they sent us on the exhibition, about a dozen of us up a river. I don't know what we were doing up there, and we had plenty to eat with us, cook and everything. And the place was full of monkeys. So the cook shot a bunch of monkeys one day and made a monkey soup, monkey stew. And I tasted it, and it was good. Uh-huh. It was real good. A lot of chicken. Mm. And
but you wouldn't eat it?
No, I opened a can of corned beef. And the cook said, "What? Don't you like my monkey stew?" And, "Yeah, sure, it's good." "Well, why don't you eat it?" I said, "Well, I like it, but it's monkey. I don't eat monkeys." But the rest of them ate it.
This is a stretcher, huh?
Yeah. That's, let's see. Yeah, we didn't use nails. We used string, you know. We tie the hind legs on here.
Uh-huh. I just let them hang free.
Yeah, but if you stretch them on here, you know, stretch them out, they'll dry nicer, you know, easier. They won't shrivel up. Well, we'd lash the hind legs on here with string. And then we had a thin piece of wood we put in the arm. Mm-hmm. And of course that arm then would come up like so, like a funnel. And, you know, dry nice. Of course we left the feet on too. Do you leave the feet on?
Yes, yeah. Right on.
Yeah, then this piece of wood we used.
Stick
pieces
in the foot.
In the foot and down against here, so the legs are standing up like so.
Well, you just fold them down when they dry, huh?
Yeah, then they dry good then. That way, then we use the round stick in here, long round stick.
Keep the air ventilated?
Hmm?
Keep air ventilated?
No, to lash the tail on.
Oh.
You split the tail all the way at the end, and then on this round stick you wrap the tail with skin out here, and tie it with a string on there, and it's out like this. It dries good. And, of course, it after you take it off there, it'll fold back in, you know, but... And then that stretches the hide too good on this stick. And then tying the feet here on, you know, you pull the skin
down. Pull the hide down and stretch it out, yeah.
It stretches good then.
You hook the, what, the jaw?
The nose.
The nose.
The nose goes, is hooked over there. You leave the lip on and it goes over here. Then the,
tack the other lip.
Then the ears are here. You could, if you clean the ears good, take the gristle out and then leave a little skin on the front. Then you could put little pieces of
papers,
or wood.
Wood.
Well, we used to take all the gristle out, so there was just the skin left,
uh-huh.
With a little tiny flap on the one side. You left the skin.
Mm-hmm.
Then this little earpiece, piece of wood about that long. Pointed on the end, and that fitted in this ear, and then set on here, same as the leg things.
And then they keep the ears pointed out, too.
Yeah, and the ears dry good. You know, with all that uh-huh. gristle and stuff in it, they might even rot.
Yeah, but
yeah.
Like after, like I dry them on there until they dry, then I turn them inside out.
Mm-hmm.
Turn them inside out, and then I put paper in their ears. I mean, yeah. Not paper, but... What do you call that? Absorbent?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
scotch towels or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
That absorbent
okay.
stuff, and I stuff them in their ears really good, then it mm-hmm. absorbs a lot of it.
Oh,
the
yeah.
oils, in fact, and then they dry mm-hmm. out nice, too.
Well, the way we used to do, we used to clean the ears
yeah.
real good, same as the rest of the skin, and then put these stretchers into the ear, and let they'd be standing up, and they'd dry good. Right now, they dried same as the rest of the skin. In fact, quicker than the skin, maybe. But then that's really cleaning good, and then that tail thing, that round stick that goes in here.
You must have had a lot of different. You must have had a lot of different things for adjustments with the size. The fox, like if you got a smaller one. And
yeah.
Must have a lot of different kinds of stretches.
Mm-hmm. Well, we usually see the big fox would stretch further down.
Mm-hmm.
And
the tail.
Hmm?
The tail.
Yeah. Well, lashing the tail too onto this stretched the back, you know.
Yeah.
So it
keeps a lot of pressure on the skin.
Yeah, the skin is tight. All the skin in here, and then this, because there was some people use the solid stretcher,
mm-hmm.
but then these are
quick, those are a lot better.
Quick drying. Yeah, would take the skin off maybe just overnight.
Mm.
You know,
do you bring them in the cabin or would you leave them outside?
No, out here you've got to. Take them in where it's dry.
Yeah,
if you
right.
leave it outdoors, up in the Arctic, I guess they leave them out right out, and they where it's dry, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But on the islands here, if you try to dry your pelts outdoors, you won't have no pelt. They rot. They won't dry. No, we dried them right in the cabin.
So you'd want them to dry pretty quick, or you'd
yeah.
fill your cabin up with skins.
Yeah, we'd, in 24 hours, they were dry enough to take off, even in 12 hours.
Yeah, it all depends upon how close you can skin them, or how good you scrape them.
Yeah, if you scrape them real good, they'll dry enough, say, overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Though we never took them off overnight, but...
I
once in a while,
for about 2 days or a day
yeah,
and a half.
That's better. But take them off before they get too hard.
Yeah, because then you can't turn them.
Oh, if you leave them, especially up here, get hard as a rock. You couldn't turn that nose.
Mm.
So you, but 2 days they're dry, good and dry, in 2 days. But there was times when, not very often, that we took them just say 12 hours.
Like when you had a lot of skins?
And yeah, we had a lot of skins, and they were dry enough so they stayed the way they were, you know.
Mm-hmm. After you take them off this frame, then you turn them inside out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could. Though, when I was out in Atka during the 20s, I see there were still some of them guys hunted with bidarkies then, and they'd leave the skins, you know, just the way they took them off the stretcher, and they'd make little bundles, little bundles that big around. They'd have a dozen skins in there.
Tie them up. They stack a lot. They stack. Yeah,
for stacking in the bidarkie, you know.
Mm.
Yeah.
They pack better when they're not inside out.
Yeah.
Well, the fur is in, you know.
Uh-huh.
Inside, so it's already. If you turn it out, then you have to have a gigantic bag to put them in because they're springy like and.
So when they're inside out.
When they're inside out, and
yeah.
They're inside out when they're on this frame.
Yeah.
And then all you have to do is just pull them off, and then if you pull all your skins off your stretch, and they just stack them, and they stack in a small pile, you can compress them. If you take them out, and they get big and fluffy because of all the fur and stuff.
Yeah. Okay. And you can compress them if you turn them with the fur out, because you can push down here, and it'll come up here like. Well, I seen, came in one time with a dory from Adak to Atka, and I towed two bidarkies. And these guys had they had 100 pelts, and they had them in little packages that big. So they could store them in their bidarkie, and me, I had, 140 pelts, and mine were with the fur out. I had two great big bags, big as that
cabinet.
That cabinet there. But you couldn't compress them because they were springy. They'd all that fur.
You usually get a lot better price for them too. Like if you take them out inside out and stretch them and brush them.
Oh yeah.
You mean if you put them with the fur on the outside?
Yeah. You turn around and brush them. The better.
Of course, these guys.
These guys
that carried them in the bidarkies, when they got home, they'd turn them, you know, and hang them out on the clothesline, let them dry, and so forth. Mm. But they had them. They left them same as on the stretcher, and. They packed real tight, and they'd have a little piece. They had a little bag, sealskin bags or something, about that long, and about that big around. They'd have a dozen pelts in there. But if they had the fur out, they'd put two or three pelts in there, and that would be it.
When you were on the islands, then after you took the pelts off the frames.
Mm-hmm.
What did you store them in? Or did you have sacks or?
We used to just hang them in the corner.
Oh, okay.
And then when we got ready to travel, then we put them in the sacks. We used to rob the post office once, and we took mail sacks with us. They were good box bags.
So which islands were the ones that you trapped on the most?
Well, I trapped on, I trapped on a lot of islands here. Let's see, on Alaska Island, Omnak. Well, in Four Mountains, I only trapped that one.
The small one there?
Yeah. And I trapped Amley.
Which did you find the best?
Hmm?
Which area was the best to track them?
These out here.
By ADEC?
This group here, these little islands here.
The Delaroff Islands?
Yeah, those were the best Fox Islands.
Why were they better?
Well, they were low and had a lot of beach on. Fox food, the blue foxes, they got most of their food on the beaches.
And there was an awful lot of them.
Hmm?
A lot of them.
Yeah. I guess red foxes do too.
Yeah, they go down the beach.
Yeah, but the blue foxes seem to be more of a beach animal.
They blend in with the rocks too.
Mm-hmm. That's why they did so good on the islands, because the other foxes depended too much on birds and stuff. Though they'd go on the beach too, but the blue foxes, any island that had a lot of reefs and beach food on, mm-hmm. those were the best islands.
What kind of foxes did you get? Like this red and
hmm? Well, on where they were, like here in Umnak, reds crossed, once in a while silver.
Well, who did you sell them to?
Where? Well, you could sell them in the store or ship them to Seattle for exchange. That's where we used to send our blues, Seattle for exchange.
What fox did you get the highest price for?
For blue foxes,
blue?
Yeah.
And cross?
Well, and the cross foxes brought good money. Well, all foxes did then. And but the blues, they were more plentiful, and you could get $100. So you had 100 foxes. Well, you could get, if they were all good, you could average $125 for them.
Mm.
Because they grade them there in the market. And, well, like me, I used to do all my trapping in January, most of it. And these other guys that had the same foxes, they'd do theirs in November. Before it snowed. Well, I got twice as much money for mine than I did than they did.
Mm.
And they wondered why. And I trapped them when they were at their best. See, in November they're good, but they haven't got the full fur yet.
Would you put your traps out every day, or what did you do? You had different trap lines, or?
Well, on the islands, you had just your one trap line.
And the fox never got smart and stayed away?
Well, once in a while, one did, but they were easy to catch most of the time.
What was the most you caught in one day?
Hmm?
What was the most fox?
Well, on the blue foxes, I caught, because they were, it's just like in a pen, you know, they're on this island, and they wasn't smart. Well, one time, the first day I caught 21 foxes. I set 21 traps and I had 21 foxes. That was a long day. But on the mainland, or, well, like on Alaska Island here, that, let's see, the most foxes I ever got in one day on this island was 5. That was on the Pacific side.
When you were on these islands for quite a while, it didn't matter then? The skins didn't deteriorate? Or
no, as long as you kept them
dry. As long as they were dry, they were okay. Mm-hmm. Anybody think of any other questions about connected with the fox? Albert? Any questions?
How come you don't see as much blue fox on Oahu as you say you did in the other islands?
Well, on Alaska? Well, on Alaska never had blues.
Never did?
No, it had reds.
Just red?
From way back.
And when did what's the cross fox?
Well, that's a red fox.
Is it?
Yeah. Cross fox, silver fox, red fox, and black fox. It's all one fox.
How can it be all one if it has different names?
Well, it's different colors. Mm. But I mean, it's one brand of foxes.
In one litter, you could have different colors?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, and when the fox ranchers want to raise silver foxes, well, there ain't, like this big fox rancher in Michigan, Fromm Brothers, two young fellas, they decided to raise silver foxes. So they caught two wild silver foxes and bred them in the pen. They had literal red foxes. So the first guy that succeeded in breeding a silver fox, I don't know how long it took him, maybe 20 years, on Prince Edward Island. Well, he finally bred silvers, selective breeding. And he got rich selling livestock to other farms. Well, a blue fox, you know, is actually a white fox.
Is it white?
Hmm?
It's a white fox.
Yeah.
It's just, they just mate with a red fox or something?
No, no. A blue fox is just an off-color white fox.
There aren't any white foxes around here, is
no.
There?
No. No, no. Now, when I stocked, and once in a while you get a throwback from blue fox. I did one time. And, you know, I put nothing but blue foxes on that island, from another island. And the first time I trapped that island, I had 27 white foxes.
Hmm. They were all white?
Yeah. Throwbacks, you know, from where what they used to be.
Do you think there's any around anymore?
Well, on these islands were stocked in during the 20s. See, they had nothing on, so they stocked them with blue foxes.
Did they have them on this island too?
No, this one had red foxes on.
Couldn't you put blue fox on an island with red fox?
Well, we tried it, and the red foxes ate up the blue foxes. Mm. And that is, the blue foxes disappeared, and
the red fox were still there.
Yeah.
What about the black fox? Do you still see it?
Yeah, well, it's on the same, it's a red fox, I mean the family.
What about silver ones? Is that the same as the black fox?
Yeah, silver, black, and cross fox are all in the same family, red fox. The only way they...
How do they change colors?
Well, oh, that's the way they're born. See, the silver fox, they had to select breed them for years before they got them to breed silver.
We're going to be in here again tomorrow, and if you want to come, if you want a chair, you can pick one up in the home ec room and bring it down, but you have to bring it back afterwards.
Okay.
Or you can just come in and sit on the floor. That's okay.
Did you,
that room is used too many times, and it's used after school, too, for that detention hall.
You know, did you do much trapping and trails?
That was Glenn. He stepped out.
Oh, he went out.
Trails?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, fox trails, you know, they have their own trails. That when there's no snow, they walk in these, you see them up in the hills here and there. A trail that some of them, when there was a lot of foxes, some of them trails are big. You know, especially the ones come from their den down.
That's what Glenn said he did. He went up by the den and just waited for them to come out and he'd shoot them.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you trap in the trail, you want to set your trap this way in the trail.
Yeah.
Like, where's the paper? Yeah. Well, here's your trail. And here's your trap. Here's the... Well, here's your trap with the two springs.
Yeah.
All right, you turn the springs this way toward the tongue. This way. And then you put the trap in the trail this way. See?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the trail. And you turn the springs this way toward the where this goes over the whoop. See, and if you see when the fox then steps in that trap, he'll get caught. Now, if you put the trap in the trail this way, here's the pan, and here's your. Well, the fox could step on that and the jaw will throw his foot up in there and you'll miss.
Mm.
Mm. So that's the way, put it with the jaws toward the side of the trail instead of crossways. See, then when he steps in that, he's caught for good. This way, I know I've had it. Well, his paw would hit that, then this jaw would hit his foot and throw it up in there, and the trap would miss then.
Don't you usually set two traps, though?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, you could set two traps, and then if you bait the trap, so I usually used to sit, unless there was a lot of foxes, you know. And then if you bait the trap, cut your bait up in little tiny pieces and scatter them all around.
Oh, so walk around you?
Yeah, well, he'll forget about the trap, you know, and he'll be searching around there and bang, he gets caught.
Yeah. See you later.
Where if you put the... a big hunk of bait right at the trap, you might get that bait, you know, and even if it's underneath the trap, you might, you know, he'll be scratching around there and this will happen to him. The trap will spring and throw his foot out and he'd get your bait, and you wonder how the heck he got that bait.
Hmm.
Without getting caught.
Yeah. Ah. Okay. the kid that was trapping, his he's Ole Hoggensen's son.
Yeah.
And I guess they're going to Norway tomorrow.
Are they?
And so he had to go out to check with some of his other teachers about his homework and stuff. Yeah, they're going to be over there, I guess, in a couple weeks or so.
Yeah. Yeah, I know this. Some of these guys that this few years back that never trapped before, and or I guess they didn't. Anyhow, their skins wasn't drying, you know. And they'd come and ask me, and I. Not seeing the skin wasn't clean good.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was...
That's okay.
I just wanted to ask, can I get it like later? I don't want to...
Sure. Oh, okay. All right, fine.
Yeah, they leave that oil bag on the back, you know. Okay. Like I did when I first started. Yeah.
Be a lot of...
Sure, I saw one time... Oh, Jesus. Guy had it on the stretcher for probably 2 weeks. The skin was still soft. It just wouldn't dry with all that oil.
The time you were on that island for 9 months, was that with Innocenty Petticoff?
Yeah.
Because you mentioned an old man, and I remember you telling about him before, and getting all the eagles on that whale.
I got 150 eagles.
Yeah.
I gave them to the boy.
For the bounty?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was dollar a bounty, dollar a bounty then.
Oh. Yeah. That must have been quite a stay that long.
Mm-hmm. Of course, we didn't mind it too much. Because that was a fairly big island, you know, and there was a lot of interesting things on it.
Mm.
Aleuts lived on it so far back that there was a cave there for one thing, and you know, I found bones underneath the rocks, and one place there, of course, that wasn't too old, was a Bidarki frame with two skeletons.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know how old that was. Yeah. It wasn't, it was, the Bidarki frame, no skin on it, just the frame. It wasn't exactly a cave, just a long overhang.
Okay.
And, you know, just about, well, it was only 3-4 feet deep, but the Bidarki was in there.
Mm-hmm.
That way, and the skeletons were there, right alongside the Bidarki, not in the Bidarki, but on the outside.
Mm.
But that couldn't have been too old, but it was old enough so that, well, let's see, how old could it have been? The skin was off the Bidarki. There was no foxes on the island when those skeletons were there.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a lot of people lived on that island in the old days. But this Bidarki frame, gee, it was a nice one too, two hatcher, no skin on it, just the frame, and the two skeletons.
Yeah.
Well, those islands, let's see. Where was the Del Rock? Yeah, these are the ones, huh?
Yeah.
Those were, gee, there was, there must have been a lot of people lived on them.
Now those are just in between Amchitka and, Atka,
there,
I guess.
Right here. Yeah, here's the ones.
Mm-hmm.
Right here. They're kind of a little out of line out here. Well, this is not accurate, you know.
Yeah.
Just gives you the
approximate.
Yeah. See, this island here, this Amatignac.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had that island, too.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, here's this, because I never trapped it. I sold it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I sold it to another guy I don't know if he ever trapped it.
Did you plant it?
Yeah, I planted foxes on it, and the price was going down in the 30s, and I was interested in closer islands, so I sold him my island for $5,000, which was a lot of money then.
Yeah.
And later on, they trapped it, and it didn't do too good, so I was ahead.
Yeah.
Of the game then, yeah. But this island, there was this side here. Gee, was this, it must be right on the edge of the Aleutian Trench, because there's no beach there, the cliffs come right out the water, and gee, I ran with my boat right close to the cliffs. I don't know if they actually did, but I look up and looks like they're hanging over me. You know?
Wow. You didn't get that close to the island, huh?
There was no beach there, and deep water, right? No reefs or nothing there. It must have been the edge of the trench when the islands came up. And there was a shipwreck there. Let's see, there was right about here. Yeah, there was kind of a point stuck out here. That ship was going to Japan, loaded with timber. I saw it later on. There was two or three survivors. They got ashore, I don't know how, but they waited right there. They could have went just a little ways across, see that little point there?
Uh-huh, on the east side.
Yeah, there was the cabin there.
Oh.
With food in. The trapper, when they trapped that island, they left their food there, whatever they had left. But these guys stayed there for, I think it was 3 days. And they got picked up, one of the, I heard the way they got wrecked, let's see, where is this now? See, they were in a big storm, and Nevada.
Yeah.
Nevadan was the name of the ship.
Yeah.
She was loaded with Jap squares. You know, they took the logs and cut the round sides off. They call them Jap squares. Anyhow, they were going on the Great Circle route to Japan, and they run into this big storm. And here, Delroff. Well, southeast, or from Pacific. So they were gonna go through here and get on this side, but they missed and they hit the island. And I was there, not too long after the wreck. The pilot that. There was a shallow place there where they hit, and the pilot house was still sticking out the water. And they were quite a ways off the shore too. Well, this one of the passenger ships picked them up. the survivors.
They would send out a distress signal then.
Yeah, after they hit.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see the... Oh, yeah. Let's see the... Not long after that, the fellow's trapping on... Let's see this... Tignac Island, Ulaik Island, here's Okaluga, Skugal, Tag Island, that's a small island, Kvalg Island, Ulaik. These islands Ulaik is the biggest island in this group. Mm. This one is small, but anyhow, the house is in this bay here.
In the south, yeah.
Yeah. And, they found, here was the wreckage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the guys trapping on there, they found a barrel of beer.
Oh, yeah?
That came from this wreck.
Hmm.
And they also found a side light screen, the screen with where they have the red and green lights, one on each side.
Yeah.
That came off.
Hmm.
And somebody must have been hanging on to that,
mm-hmm.
and scratched a message on the paint. Something like... he didn't finish the message. We are fighting for our lives, love. That was it.
Hmm.
The same guy found the beer
hmm.
On there. He found that. That wreckage must have just drifted across there,
Yeah, yeah.
See, he found this wreckage on this side. That
on the west side.
On that side. Uh-huh. The house was in this bay here.
Hmm. Who was that? Do you remember?
Yeah, that was Peter Samokinski.
Oh.
You remember him, huh?
Yeah,
the guy, and he was there with his stepfather, Charlie Rose, and his mother.
Hmm.
And they didn't have much grub there. But Peter didn't mind it. They lived on sea line mostly.
Oh, okay. Women didn't usually go out to the island,
no.
Did they?
No, they didn't. Except Amchitka.
Okay.
So when the Atka people trapped Amchitka. Yeah, sure, Amchitka, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They had Amchitka. They used to take 1,000 pelts off of there.
Yeah.
And divide the money in the village
mm-hmm.
with all the people, men, the babies, everybody
got
to share.
A share.
Yeah.
That's fair.
The guys that had the biggest family got the most. We remember that, what the heck was his name now? He was kind of elderly man. He had a fairly young wife, and he had a big family. Gee, he got to... The dividing money that year was $1,000 each. So they had 1,000 pelts, and they got $100 a pelt for them.
Mm.
See, that was $100,000.
Yeah.
That was cash money that was distributed to the people.
Mm.
Besides, a lot of the men had their own private islands, and then they trapped Atka Island, and this was the Amchitka.
Mm.
See, what the heck was his name anyhow? He was, he had a big family. He got, I think, $12,000.
Wow.
That's, there was a guy that very seldom had $100.
Mm.
And, he was happy.
Yeah, I can tell.
He was thinking about how he could produce some more kids.
Yeah. I've got to run a sheet of paper down the...